I am the hammer. There was no soothing Nakir's pride. That mattered little to Aladir, who, as the head of the hand, always had other options. You are the hammer. I am the hand that wields it. Don't forget your place, Nakir. Aladir fixed his golden eyes with that of Nakir's, until his brother looked away, submitting. Now, Aladir checked that the doors were closed. How serious a threat is this House of Owls? Nakir took a breath, bringing his temper under control. Their leader is quickly becoming legend. The White Owl. Aladir had already heard back from his assassins. He is well trained, by all accounts. Some of the City Watch have reported that he fights like that of an honor guard. Aladir had heard of the prowess of the Emperor's royal guards. They were said to rival any warrior in all of Ilion, even the famous Greycoats. Of course, they were children in the eyes of an Arrakesh. "These accounts can be trusted?" the elf asked. "He always leaves one or two alive to tell of his skills." Nakir looked out across the city vista, as if he might see the White Owl stalking across the rooftops. "He uses fear as a weapon." Aladir was quickly coming to respect this slave. "He has inspired the slave population," Nakir continued, "not only in Karath, but in Amiraska and Tregaron. I fear that times are changing in the south, and at the wrong time, no less." "How so?" Aladir asked, curious to his brother's insight. The arid lands had been akin to a child to Nakir. He had guided them and molded them over the centuries. The slavers continue their work diligently, but the soldiers, the city watch, they are beginning to sympathize with the slaves, looking to the other kingdom's way of doing things. They continue to follow their orders, but I sense defiance.
"Rorschach doesn't appear to have that attitude," Aladir offered.
"He garners less respect every day. The men look to his second-in-command, Halion. Despite his father's failings in the royal guard, he has risen through the ranks on the merits of his own deeds."
"His father?"
"I forget his name. These humans are all the same to me. He was exiled from the arid lands after failing to protect the Emperor and his wife from assassination." Nakir had a wicked smile stretching his cheeks. "Would that be the same assassination you orchestrated?" Aladir remembered some of the details, but had been more interested in the results at the time. "Indeed. I killed the spineless pair myself. I made it appear as though the House of Owls were responsible." "I fear you may have only added strength to their spreading cause, brother. Though controlling the boy emperor is far easier, I will concede." Aladir made for the door. He had been traveling almost constantly since leaving Valinus in Namdor, and was in need of sleep. "Don't worry, brother. Soon Karath will be under the lash of your whip once more. In the meantime, you should consider getting some rest. Soon we will be expected to open Scylla's Gate, a feat far greater than we expect, I'm sure." Torin, son of Nun, crept through the upper walkways of the great forges. Beneath him, hundreds of blacksmiths and armourers worked tirelessly by their anvils and forges to produce swords, helmets, spears, and breastplates, each glowing orange under their relentless hammering. Walking between the smiths were Karathan guards, keeping a close eye on their work. Except for the orange light of the molten forges, the massive warehouse was casting darkness on the edge of the city. The White Owl hopped over the railing and climbed down a wooden beam until he was among the many tables laden with fresh works. Keeping an eye on the guard's patrolling pattern, Torin swept the piece of armor off the table and examined it from within his mask. It was a helmet of sorts, though the faceplate was shaped like that of a hawk, with a long sloping mouthpiece that ended in a sharp point. It was well-crafted and made from strong metal. How long had Orith been supplying them with minerals? Were they planning on replacing all the armor in Karath's army? Torin could see no reason why they would, especially with the cost of it all. The White Owl moved silently between the forges, though his footfalls were entirely removed by the constant hammering. The guards crossed each other's path and completely missed Torin, who had timed his steps perfectly. On the other side of the warehouse, the Son of Nun examined some of the weapons being boxed and loaded into carts. Spears, swords, axes, bows, and even clubs were being prepared. There were already owls waiting outside, ready to follow the carts and discover their destination. Torin reached out to handle one of the swords when he detected the slightest of movements out of the corner of his eye. It was as if the shadows themselves came to life when the darkened corners of the forge gave birth to any warrior's nightmare.
Torrin flung his body backwards in what would have normally been considered lightning reflexes. But on this occasion, the flying knife skimmed against the owl-shaped mask in an explosion of sparks. The helmet alone saved his life as he turned his evasion into a backwards flip. When he came back up, the white owl was holding a dagger in each hand. His resolve faltered, dampening his usual rage when he looked upon the sight of three Arrakesh. Torrin had never seen the legendary assassins before, but the red cloth that covered their eyes was enough to identify them. It was also enough to remind him what fear felt like. For the first time in a long time, the white owl considered running from a fight. The smith stopped hammering and stared at the four warriors in terror. The guards came rushing over, weaving between the many forges and anvils with their swords drawn. All three Arrakesh acted as one body and threw a jagged knife, each one slaying a guard before they could interfere with their fight. Chaos erupted as the smiths dropped their tools and half-forged materials and ran for the doors, leaving sparks to shoot into the air when the heated metals found their resting place on the floor. Torrin didn't wait for an invitation and lunged at the closest assassin. It was immediately apparent that he was fighting a foe with skill superior to any he had fought before. The Arrakesh evaded every swipe and slash of his daggers, not bothering to draw the twin swords on his back. When the opening didn't present itself, the assassin made one and flung Torrin's arm away, bringing his knee up into the white owl's stomach. The blow pushed him back into a wooden pillar, where another Arrakesh was waiting by his side. The owl-shaped helmet took most of the swift punch, but the force of it was still enough to knock Torrin to the ground. "Get up!" Selim's voice resounded in his mind from years past. From all fours, Torrin silently removed a hand-sized blade from his belt and launched it behind him without looking. His black cape disguised most of the dagger's flight, until at the last moment it plunged into the assassin's shoulder, driving him back into the pillar. It wasn't enough to slow him down, however, and the blindfolded man pulled the blade free of his flesh without so much as a grimace. The white owl had no intention of letting these men live. Torrin quickly grabbed one of the fallen hammers and threw it end over end into the assassin's hand. The hammer slammed into the top of the dagger's hilt, where it drove the blade back into the assassin's heart with his own hand wrapped around it. The Arrakesh gasped and slid down the pillar and into the murky depths of the afterlife, a place Torrin was hoping to avoid this night. The two remaining Arrakesh didn't appear to be angered by the death of their kin, but both launched as one, with their short swords raised. Torrin had no time to celebrate his defeat over an Arrakesh, and instead used his youthful agility to evade and dodge their attacks while rolling across the damp floor. The white owl came up running, intending to change the environment in which they fought. He stopped and swiveled on the spot when the glowing forges and anvils surrounded him. Now the assassins would have to take care, or suffer the devastating heat of molten metal. Worryingly, only one of the Arrakesh chased him across the warehouse. The other had slipped back into the shadows. As the short sword dived for his head, Torrin tilted to the left and unclipped the hook and rope from his waist. The Arrakesh brought his next blade down, cutting a neat line across Torrin's leather armor. The white owl used the taut rope in his hands to stop the next attack by catching the thrust at the assassin's wrist. A swift punch knocked the Arrakesh off balance, allowing Torrin the opportunity to wrap the rope around his wrist until the four-pronged hook was driven into the assassin's arm. Despite the killer's scream, he managed to keep a tight hold of his short sword. That was when the other Arrakesh made himself known. Leaping from behind a forge, the assassin lunged for Torrin, who simply kicked the other sword arm of his captive Arrakesh, forcing it to flick up and slow the approaching assassin. In the same seamless movement, Torrin pulled down on the rope and forced the assassin's hand onto the steaming black surface of an anvil. The skin sizzled and burnt as the Arrakesh thrashed about. He soon yielded his sword, which fell to the floor, and lashed out at the white owl with abandon. Torrin was forced to kick him back, taking the other Arrakesh with him. They stood their ground before him, one with both swords ready to tear Torrin apart, the other cracking the knuckles of his burnt hand, now more than happy to simply beat Torrin to death, if necessary. The white owl breathed heavily inside his mask. He had finally found a fight where his rage had no place. They weren't slavers or whipmasters. This opponent would require guile and cunning if Torrin was to fight another day. Selim al-Anan had spent years trying to teach him patience in order to master an inner peace. This calm but furious heart was the core of all warriors, Selim had said to him. Without it, he was just an animal lashing out in the dark. With all that in mind, Torin had already taken steps to ensure his survival this night. His width and that of his cape hid the burning anvil behind him. The Arrakesh both lunged as one, closing the gap in the blink of an eye. That was when Torin dropped to one knee. The bag containing the tallow spices had finally burnt through atop the anvil, and the explosion of light and sound overwhelmed the Arrakesh. They both staggered backwards with expressions of horror and agony. Keeping his rage in check, the White Owl pushed off the ground with a dagger in both hands. Having already assessed their armor, Torin thrust the blades into the gaps behind their chest plates and stepped back. Both men dropped to their knees when blood began to fill their lungs. Torin removed his finest blade with the hilt of an owl and dropped once more to one knee and slashed across both of their throats in one swipe. After they fell to the floor, dead, Torin stumbled to his feet and sheathed the blade across his chest. He looked down at his work in amazement, the realization slowly hitting home. He had killed three Arrakesh. They were said to be the greatest fighters in all of Ilion. Torin owed everything to Selim and his training. Without the old warrior's devotion to a lost and savage slave boy, Torin would have been killed 100 times over before this night. Before leaving the forges, he stooped low to pick up the hawk-like helmet. He would show this to Halion as soon as possible. They had much to discuss, especially the reason why the forges had been under the secret guard of the Arrakesh. Chapter 12 Out for a Stroll. Asher stood on the corner of the crossroad in the heart of Lirion. One way would lead him north and out of the city. The other would take him back to the pickaxe. The ranger had a bag of gold on his belt and a sword on his back. He didn't need much more than that to get by. He wasn't sure how long he'd been standing there, contemplating his next step. A part of his mind tried to convince him that he would be of no use to Reyna and the others, or even worse, he would lead them all to a certain death in the pit. But fighting was all he knew. It was the only life he understood anymore, and he wouldn't be finding a new one any time soon. War was unavoidable. Fighting aside, thinking of them as friends was still foreign to him. But keeping the elves and Nathaniel alive had started to feel more important to him than getting by. Ignoring his training and the instinct to survive came down to him putting one foot in front of the other until the tavern was in front of him again. By the time Asher returned to the axe, the streets of Lirion had been deserted by its daytime inhabitants. Taverns across town came to life as their regular patrons drank into the night, preparing to stumble home under the canopy of the stars. The axe was by far the easiest tavern to find in the whole city, with the general hubbub of noise breaching the walls and spilling into the street. The ranger stopped briefly to pat Hector across the neck and make sure the horses had plenty to eat and drink. Despite his often cowardly nature, Asher had grown fond of the steed. Asher made his way downstairs to the ranger's private bar and found a most captive audience. Even Bale the Barbarian was sat around the fire, listening intently, as Reyna told them of recent events, as well as a few ancient ones. Even Caleb Jourdain, who should have been residing in a drunken stupor by now, was focused on the elf's every word. Glade turned to look at Asher with wide eyes and an expression of wonder the ranger had never seen on him before. "I know I call you an old man, but..." Glade looked Asher up and down, as if seeing him for the first time. "How have ye of all people wound up in this mess?" Doran bellowed, surrounded by empty beer cups. Selim walked up to Asher and patted him on the arm. "For a man over 1,000 years old, you don't look a day over 60. The rangers erupted in laughter, as did Nathaniel and Reyna. Asher simply nodded with the merriment and noticed Phelan's serious gaze. Jokes about longevity were clearly not amusing to an immortal. "I have coin." Asher placed the satchel of bits onto the table. "And I've found a caravan leaving in 3 days. They were more than happy to have us on the road with them."
3 days?
Felin echoed with disbelief. Hadavad the mage rose from the floor.
"You really mean to destroy Varanus?"
"We do," Nathaniel replied for all of them.
The old mage looked away in contemplation for a moment, stroking the beard around his mouth.
"I shall retire for the evening. Good night to you all, and thank you for sharing perhaps the most spellbinding of tales, Princess Rayna."
Hadivad bowed, and Atharia stood up to follow her mentor.
"I shall retire also." Phelan stood up to leave.
The elf tried to get the attention of the princess, but Rayna avoided her gaze, eager to remain with the eclectic bunch of rogues. Phelan simply rolled her eyes and retired to her room, beyond the private bar. Asha wanted to follow her and discover the cause for her true alarm, though he suspected it was the delayed travel time. After another hour of questions from the adventurous rangers, Nathaniel and Rayna left together. Asha could see that they had some things to work out, as well as a few other things to get out of their system. Bale and Salim took up a small table and fell into conversation about the prowess of the Arrakesh versus that of the Greycoats. Having seen these two forces collide firsthand, the ranger was more than happy to join Glade and Doran by the fire, however, ale in hand.
"Elves, dragons, assassins, epic battles, and an ancient prophecy to boot."
Glade eyed Asher over his tankard. "You have been a busy outlander."
"Thankfully I'm yet to cross paths with a dragon," Asher commented.
"Yet," Doran replied before belching. "Seems to me that there's a whole lot going on out there that we don't know about." The dwarf downed another ale. "And how dare you be older than me, you haggard old shit? I'm supposed to be the old wise one in these parts."
Asher and Glade laughed as they had years ago.
"I was asleep for most of it. You're still older."
The rangers laughed again, Doran included. The ominous high-pitched squeal of a pig resounded from the floor above them, along with the shattering of glasses and screams from the waitresses. The wooden beams above them shook and dust rained down from one end of the room to the other.
"Heavy belly!" Russell shouted down the stairs. Doran was already laughing. "I told you to keep that hog under control. He's drinking more than you." "He's just for a bit of fun,"
Doran shouted back between fits of laughter.
"Get your fat ass up here before I mount his head on my wall."
Their merriment continued for the rest of the long night, old friends reunited with new stories and plenty of drink. Rayna collapsed onto Nathaniel's bare chest and moved with the rise and fall of his heavy breathing. Everything about his body was different to that of an elf, from the hair on his face and chest to the scars that crisscrossed his skin. Nathaniel was the most exquisite creature she had ever seen. The princess kissed him and looked into his eyes, feeling the pit opening in her stomach. She didn't want to see those eyes grow old and finally close once and for all, and yet he was fated to.
"What's wrong?" the knight asked.
"You gave me the same look yesterday, on the road to Lirion."
"It's nothing."
Rayna shook her head and kissed him again. Nathaniel rolled over and took the elf with him, until they were side by side, Rayna encompassed in his thick arms.
"Talk to me," he said.
Rayna hesitated.
"I have become fond of you."
Nathaniel glanced at their entwined bodies with a childlike grin.
"Oh, good."
The knight had sensed those weren't the words she had intended, and Rayna knew it.
"I am afraid to lose you," the elf replied more honestly.
Nathaniel stroked her jaw and turned Rayna's face to see his own.
"We will fight by each other's side, always keeping the other safe. There is no fighting time."
The princess dipped her head into his chest again, avoiding his look of surprise.
"I thought immortals lived in the present, with no fear of the future."
Nathaniel stroked the curve of her ear and kissed her cheek softly. Rayna rolled out of his embrace.
"Even if your mortality wasn't certain, I am a princess, an elven princess, and you are
just a man." Rayna met his eyes once more, and knew that she looked upon more than just a man. She cupped his stubbled cheek in one delicate hand and kissed him passionately.
"Nathaniel Galfrey will never be just a man, and you are so much more than a princess, or even an elf. They do not define you. You can choose who you want to be, who you want to be with. Meeting you has shown me that. I defined myself as a knight, a greycoat. But before any of that, I am simply a man who loves a woman, an elf."
Nathaniel smiled, and Rayna couldn't help the tear that streaked across her cheek.
Neither of them had talked about their love for each other before. In her heart, she knew that she loved this man. But in her head, Renée knew that the odds were stacked against them. If the forces of Valinus didn't kill them first, her father surely would, before allowing her to marry any human.
"You won't lose me,"
Nathaniel whispered into her ear as he pulled her close. Renée held him tight, as if time itself couldn't take him from her. Asher awoke to the sharp sound of someone clearing their throat. He was still in the same chair he had been laughing and drinking in all night. Only now Glade and Doran were gone, and Phelan was standing over him, with a scornful expression. Despite her incredible beauty, the elf could look mighty fearsome when she wished to.
"Morning."
Asher's throat was hoarse, and the word broke in his mouth. "It's dawn."
"Hence the greeting."
Asher looked away, trying to shake off the spinning feeling in his head. He was relatively immune to the effects of alcohol, but Doran's own brew was potent, even to an old Arrakesh. "Dare I ask how much sleep you have acquired?" Phelan presented the ranger with a glass of cold water.
"Enough for a day of gathering supplies."
"Don't be sick," Asher thought over and over. "That is not what we are doing today." Phelan had the hint of a smile on her face. Asher gladly took the water and mirrored her expression.
"And what are we doing today?"
The water was a soothing balm as it ran down his throat.
"Scouting."
Asher cocked an eyebrow.
"What are we scouting exactly?"
"The Tower of Gadivans." Phelan turned away, missing Asher's confused expression.
"And why are we scouting the Tower of Gadivans?"
In truth, Asher was enjoying their little exchange. "Because we're not waiting around here for 3 days to then embark on a journey that will take the better part of a week, probably even more if we travel with the caravan." The elf donned her cloak and scimitar. "How will the Tower of Gadivans help matters?" Asher could see he wasn't going to have a choice, and so strapped his quiver and folded bow to his back, as well as his rune short sword. He held Aladir's blade for just a moment before strapping it to his back as well. Phelan smiled knowingly. "It's a school for magic, yes? Then it stands to reason that they will be in possession of crystals." Asher could see where she was going now. "I can use the magic stored within them to open a portal and transport us most of the distance. We just need to... how do you humans say it? Burgle them?" Asher couldn't help his mirthless laugh. "I'm a ranger, not a burglar." "You were an assassin and an outlander before that, were you not? I'm sure you will adapt." Phelan stepped over the previously concealed sleeping form of Doran, son of Dorian, and made for the door to the tavern above. The Tower of Gadivans was easy to find amid the hybrid elven architecture. Lyrian's sleek and curving buildings were interrupted here and there with man-made structures and refurbishments, but the tower had been built around 500 years ago, if Asher's memory served. The crooked tower was 3 times the height of those around it, and constructed entirely of grey stone slabs. A 10-foot wall surrounded it, with a simple wooden gate that opened onto a busy street, which curved around the wall. Its pointed top was decorated with a broken weather vane. All in all, it wasn't much to look at.
"They teach magic in there?"
Phelan asked, skeptically.
"It's no Corcanoth, but it tends to take in those they reject," Asher offered.
A familiar voice spoke to them from behind.
"Gadivans himself was a reject of Corcanoth."
The old mage, Hadavad, and his apprentice, Atharia, were standing on the corner of the street, observing the pair. Asher looked around to check that no one was paying them extra attention. It wouldn't be long before King Rengar sent someone to find them after word got back that he had accessed his account at Stowhold. He appealed to Lyrian's king at the time, and convinced him that the school would bring good fortune to Felgarn. Some believe he used a spell to sway the king.
"Hadavad,"
Asher bowed his head, "what are you doing here?"
"What are you doing here?"
the mage countered with a tilted head. His sparkling blue eyes bored into the ranger's.
"Just out for a stroll,"
Asher replied with a coy smile. The mage leaned on his wooden staff, carved into 2 entwining snakes whose heads met at the top. Between the 2 heads was a medium-sized crystal, perfectly wedged in the mouths of the snakes. He looked to Phelan, who remained mostly hidden within her hood, and looked past her to the tower. Hadavad was not one to easily fool.
"Had I any crystals to give, I certainly would."
Asher wasn't surprised that the Major seemed straight into the heart of their stroll. "Your errand is a grave one," Hadibert sighed, and glanced at his apprentice. "And so we shall help you in this most perilous of tasks."
"You will help us acquire the crystals?"
Phelan asked, surprised. There weren't many she held in high esteem among their race.
"Of course," Hadibert replied.
"And then we will help you defeat Valinus."
The statement took Asher back. Hadivad and Dotharia were willingly going to put themselves in the middle of a war. He thought of Rayna and her tenacity, her resolve to vanquish the Dark Elf and bring peace to Verda. It was hard to meet the princess and not get swept up in her self-appointed mission.
"You know where we're going," Asher said.
"Indeed. You mean to go into the harshest desert in Ilion, cross paths with the slavers of the arid lands, and sneak into a place that has never been seen before, except by you, of course." Hadivad looked to his apprentice.
"Sounds like fun."
Atharia's reply was exaggerated by her eager grin.
"You and I have a different idea about fun," Asher quipped.
Hadivad laughed to himself.
"Atharia's gotten into some trouble seeking fun." The mage beckoned for them to follow him as he made for the tower. Now, walking through the gate is not a wise choice for entry. Much like Korkanath, only those who have been invited can pass through them. Though instead of a dragon, there are two stone gargoyles that will flatten you on the other side. Scaling the walls is also out of the question. The stone will ooze a viscous oil, making it too slippery to climb.
Asher gave the mage a sideways look.
"You know an awful lot about Gadavant's protective spells."
"I should think so," Hadibert harumphed.
"I helped design them."
Asher laughed quietly to himself and took the extraordinary information in his stride. Unlike Phelan, who stopped walking and looked upon Hadivad with new eyes.
"I thought this tower was constructed 500 years ago." The elf hurried to catch up again.
"Indeed it was, my elven friend."
The mage continued to circumnavigate the wall.
"Keep your voice down," Phelan hissed, looking around for any keen-eared humans.
"Fear not, Lady Phelan." Hadivad tapped the side of his staff.
"No one can hear us."
Asher examined his staff and looked around them, expecting to see some evidence of the spell Hadivad spoke of. If there was one, the ranger could not detect it, leaving him to feel vulnerable for the first time without his ring. Paldora's gem had always connected him to the magical world and granted him a sixth sense into that strange realm. Now it was gone.
"I thought my skin was tingling."
Phelan inspected the back of her hand, apparently impressed with the human mage.
"That doesn't explain your earlier statement."
"I suppose it doesn't."
Hadivad continued to walk through the streets, avoiding the many horses and carts, as well as the playing children. Asher could only smile at Phelan's frustrated expression.
"Now, even if you had a crystal, you would be unable to open a portal inside the grounds. Though humans have never possessed such magic, we have always known of its existence and taken precautions to counter it. Once inside, however, it should be relatively easy to move about undetected. The school has only ever catered for around 20 pupils."
"It doesn't look like we'll be getting inside to find out," Asher said, moving his cloak aside to allow a small boy to run past him.
"I'm getting to that."
Hadivad finally stopped on the far side of the tower. "If you wish to enter the grounds without setting off any spells or traps, you'll have to jump off that rooftop and land directly inside the wall. Don't touch the wall."
Asher looked up at the slated rooftop and did a quick calculation.
"That's an impossible jump. Even if I made the distance, the fall would break both of my legs.
Life's hard when you can't heal broken bones with a simple thought, eh?"
Hadivad nudged the ranger's arm, as if aware of the thoughts passing through his mind.
"An elf could make that jump," Phelan announced.
Hadivad smiled, as if his words had been spoken for him.
"Atharia will accompany you."
"That won't be necessary."
"Hold on," Asher interrupted. "We should put some more planning into this."
He didn't doubt Phelan's capabilities, or even that of Atharia's. He just didn't want them in harm's way, not when he had been trained for so long to accomplish such a mission.
"I'm afraid there isn't much more you can plan beyond the wall," Hadivad explained.
"However, I must insist that Atharia accompanies you, Lady Phelan. Her training demands it." Phelan ran a critical eye over the young woman.
"If she must."
"Excellent. Then I suggest you finish acquiring the supplies you require and get some rest. Tonight should prove plenty of fun." Hadivad appeared almost giddy.
Chapter 13. Stowhold.
Valinus stood in the opulent foyer of the central vaults, situated in the heart of Dragorn. The dark elf was surrounded by dead bodies, strewn and contorted into horrific and unnatural shapes. Blood decorated the marble columns and white floor, snaking between the tiles. The tall double doors in front of him continued to shake under the rhythmic banging of the battering ram. Valinus had already plundered the vaults, easily disabling their magical wards and primitive traps. They held nothing but trinkets. The relic he so desperately sought would be easily detectable amid even the most valuable of treasures. The noises of those he had questioned were hard to miss, however, and their distress had been reported to the city watch. It mattered not. Valinus had sealed the doors with magic. It would be hours before their pitiful ram knocked the doors through.
"Where is it?"
the gods hissed in his ear, as if standing beside him. The pressure almost made him recoil. But Valinus had come to embrace their presence, even if they were displeased.
"Find it!"
Their rage spilled over into his mind, and Valinus hurled a ball of burning pure energy into the furthest pillar. The marble exploded and eviscerated the surrounding pattern. The column buckled, but remained in place. If the ruling families of Dragorn had come into possession of the relic, there was only one other place they could be hiding it. Like many of the royals in the human kingdoms, the Dragorns would have more vaults inside Stowhold. The central bank was located in the northeast pavilion, off the shores of the Shining Coast. The island was said to be impregnable. He would put that to the test. Valinus soaked up more of the magical aura that permeated Dragorn. After a deep breath from within his mask, the dark elf opened another portal and stepped into Stowhold. Tygarn, the eldest of elders, breathed in the sea air and smiled as the sun blanketed him with its rays. He used his elven sense of balance to remain upright while sailing over the larger waves. The Aedain was a far wider ocean than the Crystal Sea, north of Ada. The elf looked to the north, off the starboard bow, and recognized the island from the many maps he had studied over the years. In fact, he had helped to draw many of them. The island was dark and appeared treacherous by its very nature. Even from this distance, his elven eyes could make out the faintest of structures in the haze. "They call it Stowhold," as Eric offered. The tall elf had the lean but toned build of a warrior. His blonde hair whipped about him as he stood with his hands clasped behind his back, oblivious to the rocking of the ship.
"I know. When we lived in Ilion, it was known as Surora."
In truth, Tygarn had precious few fond memories of Ilion. He had been in his 70s when they abandoned the land, and most of those decades had been marred with bloodshed and war. As Eric scrutinized the sails and looked west, to Ilion. "We should reach the Shining Coast by nightfall. The town of Darkwell isn't much further from there." Tygarn looked to the upper deck behind them. He could see Arwen magically controlling the sails and guiding the ship. They had made excellent time under his sailing skills. Indeed, all of Tygarn's companions served some advantage to their mission. As Eric was one of the greatest trackers, Arwen an outstanding sailor, and unparalleled in the art of stealth, Nalmar, who was below deck, was said to have such sensitivity to magical auras that he could find anyone or thing that used magic for miles. Tygarn looked to the port side of the ship, where Hela hung poised over the railing, her hand tied around one of the sheets. She was an elf whose spirit was as fiery as her hair. Hela's skills could be found at the end of a sword, or a bow for that matter. They were all capable warriors and killers, but Varro had assured Tygarn that Hela was something else. She had studied the art of fighting with two swords, alongside Galanor Reviri, the only other elf that could better her. "We know that they landed in the mouth of the Unmar," as Eric continued. "We can resupply in Darkwell and travel south to find their tracks from there."
"There is no need," Tygarn replied. "Their last conversation with the king puts them in Vangarth, in the south of the Evermore."
Tygarn pondered for a moment how it would feel to once again walk in those woods. "We will journey west, into the White Vale, and from there south into the Evermore."
"As you say, Counselor," as Eric bowed in respect.
Despite all of their combined skills, Tygarn was the oldest and often considered the wisest of all elves, though his most youthful of looks could often be deceiving.
Of course, his magical talents could not be compared to those aboard the ship, either. Tygon was left by Azeric to muse on the meaning of wise. Was he wise, as they all said? The elf simply believed that he looked upon the world and those around him with more detailed and experienced eyes, as his king did. A flash of light to the north pulled Tygon from his reverie. The elf narrowed his sharp eyes and focused on the sporadic flashes of multicolored light beyond, the walls of Stowhold. It was certainly magic, and powerful at that, since it was enough to bring Nalmar to his side from below decks.
"You can feel it?" Tygon asked.
"Yes." Nalmar couldn't take his eyes off the island. His dark hair was tied into a tight knot at the back of his head, while his emerald eyes gazed upon Stowhold.
"The humans have made great advances in the magical arts since our departure," Tygon observed.
Nalmar continued to stare at the island in silence, leading Tygon to ponder the meaning behind the magical display. Their report suggested the island was some kind of reservoir for the treasures of the Six Kingdoms. There were no doubt a lot of magical barriers and protective spells around Stowhold, but that didn't explain what they were seeing, or what Nalmar was feeling. Tygon knew there would be fighting to come. It was simply unavoidable with humans, whether it came to war or not. The elder looked to the west and sighed heavily at the coming conflict. The elf took no pleasure in the planned genocide, holding fast to his belief that magic was meant for more than simple destruction. His king would have him burn the world of man to the ground with magic, but the elder's loyalty had always swayed to his queen rather than his king. Lady Adelandra was ever the voice of reason in Tygon's mind. Of course, King Elim could never know of their secret meetings in the dead of night. If Elim ever discovered that it was in fact Tygon who had assisted in the queen's departure from Elandril, he would call for his head. The echoes of fate continued to play over and over in his mind. The elder believed, as Adelandra had, that the queen was the one who perceived the time they would fall. The prophecy was certainly clear on the alliance required of both shores, but Tygon found it hard to believe that any trust could be fostered between man and elf. Time, something Tygon had an abundance of, would tell of any alliance. Valinus had been unable to teleport inside the smooth black walls of the central bank. He silently cursed, only having a shard of Paldora's gem. If he had possessed the gem in its entirety, there would be no stopping him. But he could feel the edges of a seizure threatening to overcome him if he pushed too hard. That particular protective spell had only prevented him from entering Stowhold for a moment, however. The main path that led from the shore into the compound was interrupted by a ravine that ran deep into the rocky island. Visitors would typically have to wait until the drawbridge was lowered and the gate lifted. Valinus didn't wait. A warning was bellowed from atop the walls, but the dark elf balled his hands and broke the drawbridge's chains from 30 feet away. The bridge fell into place before him as the guards atop the black walls opened fire. The arrows were easily pushed aside by the field erected around his body. The projectiles were flung in every direction, in sparks of blue and red, unable to prevent his advance across the drawbridge. A wave of his gloved hand superheated the metal gate until the orange molten bars rained across the ground and sizzled. Inside, he came under attack once again, as multiple hex traps exploded to life around him. Monsters of every variety, large and small, poured out of the portals, etched into the ground. Valinus raised his open palm before the rushing horde and used a form of ancient magic known only to the gods. The insidious waves of unseen energy washed over the beasts and overcame their senses, repurposing their instincts. The monsters came to a halt, inches from his dark robes, and took in his scent, examining Valinus from head to toe. "Eat!" Valinus's order was met with eager obedience, and the creatures immediately dispersed. The sounds of men screaming and monsters feasting could be heard in every direction. Basilisks and gorgons slithered across every surface at incredible speed, while sandstalkers speared the guards to walls with their sharpened legs. The dark elf strode through most of the grounds before he was stopped again, this time by a group of mages. Bolts of lightning and balls of fire were hurtled towards him with abandon,
Valinus stopped most of them with the wave of a hand, and a shift in his shoulders every now and then to evade a spear-shaped icicle. The dark elf considered what spell to kill them with, until he sensed an overbearing presence from atop the wall, to their right. A seven-headed hydra, half-slithered, half-crawled, down the black wall and thundered into the mages. Each of its maws ensnared one of the wizards and shook them about until their bodies were in ragged pieces. Valinus waited patiently until the hydra dashed off to kill more of Stowhold's guards. The picturesque gardens which led to the main keep were shredded by the arrows and spells that had been aimed at the elf. Valinus used his enhanced speed to move between the trees and hedges as if he were nothing more than a dark blur. At the edge of the garden, he hurtled into a guard with enough speed to drive the man into the black stone, shattering his spine with a satisfying crunch. The wild swing of a sword almost caught his head, but Valinus tilted at the last second and backhanded the man, breaking his neck with a single blow. The monsters weren't far behind, having eaten and mauled all the guards and mages by the entrance. Creatures that crawled, slithered, rolled, and flew descended on the gardens and the main keep. The arrows and spells soon found new targets as Valinus made for the main doors. The heavy black doors that barred his way were covered in powerful wards designed to keep them shut. It would take hours to undo them all, and Valinus had no intention of being on the island for that long. The dark elf inspected the door and its framework closely, sensing the other spells cast over it that couldn't be seen by the eye. Indeed, the doors would remain close to him, but that would not stop him entering the building and vaults within. The Herald of the Gods extended both of his hands and used destructive magic to eat into the stonework around the doorframe. The ordinary stone cracked and split, slave to the earthquake that erupted from within the walls. The stone was quickly reduced to crumbling rubble that ran down the doors like a waterfall. Valinus dropped his arms and stood aside before the double doors fell towards him. A cloud of dust was kicked into the air when the heavy metal slammed into the ground, inches from his feet. Valinus confidently walked into the dimly lit foyer, ready for whatever they threw at him next. Instead of another monster or spell, an old man, by human standards, was standing between him and the next set of doors. Judging by his fine clothes and arrogant posture, Valinus assumed this to be the bank's overseer. The dark elf extended his magical aura to feel out any hidden spells, and found the man to be standing on a barely visible circle of ancient glyphs. It was no doubt some form of shielding magic, or the pathetic human wouldn't be standing before him. "You're not a customer of this establishment. What do you want?" the haughty man asked plainly. "I have been asked that question by hundreds over the years," Valinus mused. "But no one ever seems to grasp the truth." The dark elf slowly approached the human, a shark circling its prey. "And what is the truth?" Valinus stopped, inches from the edge of the circle. "I have never wanted anything." The elf extended his hand to the man's throat and pushed through the now visible barrier. The shield fizzed and sparked under his immense pressure, but his dominance was inevitable. With his gloved hand around the human's throat, he pulled him close. "I am the Herald of the Gods. Nothing more." Valinus flicked his wrist and broke the man's neck as if he were no more than a bird. Valinus strode through the lavish corridors, enjoying his every step. It felt exhilarating to be free of the pools and able to unleash his power, however diminished it was without the whole gem. After slaying a few more monsters and disabling a dozen more traps, both magical and mechanical, Valinus threw the last human body aside and finally entered the vaults. Their method of transporting money and goods was commendable for their meager knowledge of magic. Giant alcoves, stored high with coins and jewels, lined the caverns beneath the main keep, with the names of different banks and cities written on signs above the entrances. Behind the bars, inside the alcoves, were a series of chests the staff would use to transport the coin from Stowhold to the specific branch. After placing the coin in the chest, it could then be accessed by a similarly enchanted chest located in the individual branches. It was perfect for security reasons, allowing the transport of coin without delay or chance of being robbed in transit. Valinus had no interest in coin or jewels, however. The elf descended deeper into the caverns relying mostly on his elven eyes to help him navigate the dim surroundings. The sound of water dripping in the distance was lost in the snarl of a large monster. A fearsome guard was a good sign as far as Valinus was concerned, and the snarl was quickly followed by ground-shaking footsteps as a form began to take shape in the gloom.
"Who that, then?"
The deep gravelly voice of a cave troll preceded its giant girth. Valinus looked upon the simple creature and sighed. The cave troll was at least 7 times his height and width, and carried with it a tree-like club. A thick manacle and heavy chain was fixed to his other wrist, and disappeared off into the darkness, behind his mighty form. Most of its body looked to be made of rock, with a soft belly and chest, covered in moles and scars. Its small head was testament to its intelligence, though Valinus had always thought it a miracle that their species had mastered language at all. The Herald of the Gods raised his arm and dropped it with dramatic effect, bringing down one of the sharp stalactites from the cave ceiling. The spear of rock plunged into the troll's head and didn't stop until the bulk of its length was buried in the monster's gut. Valinus was already walking past the creature when it fell over, shaking the cave and the coins therein. Without warning, the elf's left hand spasmed and retracted into itself, creating a ball of solid muscle. The reaction threatened to creep up his arm and claim his entire body, throwing him into a seizure right there and then. Valinus dropped to his knee, feeling his energy waning and the power of Paldora's gem leaving him. With his right hand, the dark elf tore off his mask and threw aside his hood, illuminating the cave with his golden pallor. "It has been tainted." Paldora's seductive voice was sweet in his ear, but her words left him with a bitter taste in his mouth. The goddess felt so close he could actually feel her breath on his ear.
"Paldora, give me strength," Valinus cried.
"I gave you a gift from my heavens. It is not my fault you allowed it to slip through your grasp, Herald. The gem now belongs to another." Valinus snapped his head to attention, his eyes wide. "The ranger. 1,000 years entwined with a boy, leaving you naught but a shell. It no longer favors you, it seems. Perhaps we should have entrusted another with your task." Valinus clamped his jaw shut and fought through the pain emanating from his left arm. He couldn't help the groans and grunts that escaped his lips. "I live only to see you return to these lands." The tears in his eyes glistened in the light of his skin.
"Then serve. Use the magic of Nias and find it. Find the veil."
With that, he felt Paldora's ethereal presence disappear, as if she were no more than fog in the breeze. Valinus called on the shard, set into the ring, and used it to funnel the power of Nias, preventing the limitless well of magic from consuming him. It was another minute before he could stand again and retrieve his mask and conceal his supernatural appearance. With no more time to lose, the Herald of the Gods continued through the cave tunnels until he found the hidden vaults, deep underneath Stowhold. The circular door to the vaults was made of pure silver. The rare metal must have been sourced from the dwarves centuries ago, and specially crafted by the legendary blacksmiths for a handsome fee. Valinus placed the flat of his hand on the door, and knew it to be thicker than his chest. This door could keep an army of mountain giants out. He hadn't come this far to be stopped by something as simple as a door, however. Valinus pressed his hand into the cool metal and exerted his indomitable will upon it. The effect was something close to the eruption of a volcano, causing the silver to glow, turning from red to orange, spreading in waves out from his hand. The door melted around his hand, and Valinus walked through the gap, unharmed. He entered the personal vaults of the 6 kingdoms of man. Valinus could feel the god's anticipation rising at the thought of retrieving the oldest of all relics. The veil would be his. Chapter 14. Thieves in the Night. It took Galanor most of the day to traverse the oasis within Dragon's Reach, but the lush canopy and long branches offered much-needed shelter from the desert sun. The elf was starting to wonder if he would ever grow accustomed to the endless heat, as Adriel had. With the older elf in mind, Galanor looked around to ensure he wasn't being followed. Every so often, a shadow would sweep across the grass when a dragon flew overhead. Their eyes were that of a hunter's, and the best in the land, forcing Galanor to seek cover whenever his keen ears heard the beating of wings.
He hadn't been told that he couldn't walk through this part of the land, but he knew Adriel wouldn't want him near Maliath. There was a good chance that anything on two legs would upset the great dragon after being held against his will by humans for 1,000 years. That thought only led Galanor to feel better about what he was going to do. After they had rescued or discovered the fate of Adelandra, the elf could watch Maliath the Voiceless fly away, truly free for the first time since the Dragon War. Of course, all that was dependent on Maliath agreeing to take him to Malaesai, and the two of them leaving Dragon's Reach without being stopped. That task didn't seem so impossible when Galanor found the clearing in which Maliath resided. Seeing him so close to other dragons only served to show off his incredible size, with Maliath's bulk dwarfing many around him. His black scales sparkled under the direct sunlight while he lay in the middle of the giant clearing. The open space was littered with fallen trees and stumps, with tough roots protruding from the ground. It seemed it had become a daily battle for the other dragons to contain Maliath's destructive rage. That was exactly what Galanor wanted to unleash on the Darkerkin. Three large dragons glided overhead in slow circles, there to ensure Maliath was intercepted if he took off. Between Galanor and Maliath were four more dragons, three of which were just larger than Ilargo, while the one furthest away appeared to be around the same size as Galandavax. Again, the thought made Galanor look around for any sign of the ebony dragon and his rider. That was when he heard it. The soft crunch of moss underfoot, somewhere behind him. Galanor dashed behind a tall bush and slipped behind a tree, keeping one eye on the dragons. The elf waited a moment, listening. A small bush rustled on the other side of his tree before a twig snapped. It was then that Galanor realized it couldn't be Adriel. The elf would have been far stealthier in his approach. That only left one other.
"What are you doing here?"
Galanor hissed at a startled Gideon.
"What are you doing here?"
The mage looked at the elf with accusing eyes.
"You followed me?"
Galanor grabbed the mage by the arm and pulled him further into the forest, away from the sensitive hearing of dragons.
"You can't mean to do what I think, surely?"
Gideon pulled free his arm and turned on the elf.
"Didn't you learn anything at Corcanath?"
Indeed, Galanor remembered the events well and would never forget them. Aside from the fact that he freed the angriest dragon who ever lived and failed to communicate with Maliath, many innocent lives had been taken that day. The faces of the young students who had been slayed under his command would forever haunt the elf. He had taken lives before, but delivering children to the merfolk and putting his blade into the young mages of Corcanath had been too much. Galanor now walked a different path, his duty replaced with a sense of honor he was still trying to understand.
"I remember," Galanor replied, also aware that Gideon's closest friend, Abigail Rose, had died that same day.
Though he hadn't wielded the magic that killed the girl, the elf still felt responsible. "You won't get two words out before Maliath reduces you to cinders, and that's if you get to him." Gideon looked up, as if he could see the dragons above the canopy.
"I have to try, Gideon."
Galanor clamped his jaw shut and searched the area for any dragons that may have heard his hushed outburst.
"I have to try," he repeated in softer tones.
"Adelandra isn't just the queen. She is the only one who could convince the dragons, and maybe even Adriel, that action is needed. When King Elim attacks Ilion, Adelandra will be the only one who can rightfully stand against him. Imagine her influence if she had dragons standing beside her. Just their presence alone could avert war."
"We can't force them to get involved in our wars," Gideon replied.
"There wouldn't be a war if they acted." Galanor could feel his temper rising. "The Darkerkin are marching into Ilion as we speak. Your people will set sail for the Shining Coast soon, and the alliance between the Six Kingdoms has ever been on a knife's edge. There will be a war, Galanor. You and I both know it will be the biggest war Verda has ever seen, and even the dragons can't prevent all that bloodshed." Gideon stood defiant before the elf. Galanor was taken aback by the mage's wisdom. For a human, and a young one at that, Gideon was looking at the world with the eyes of an old elf. It was the type of wisdom Galanor should have been using with 4 centuries on the mage. The elf dropped his head in defeat and sat on a nearby rock, flicking his cloak over the top as he did. He was starting to sound like Adelandra. Her hope had apparently rubbed off on him, or perhaps he had taken it on himself as the price for leaving her behind. Galanor knew not, but he did know that there was no way Adalandra would be left to rot in Malaysia.
Regardless of what happens after, I am going to rescue her.
Galanor stood up again, his resolve returning, and I need Maliath to do it. The elf swept his cloak about him and walked away to continue observing the dragons. Gideon walked off into the forest with conflicting thoughts. He agreed that rescuing Adalandra was of the utmost importance, but using a mentally unstable dragon to do it was beyond risky. Maliath was as likely to kill Galanor and Adalandra before flying away again. And who knew what would be left of Malaysia when he was done? Of course, there was Adriel to consider. The ancient elf certainly wasn't the dragon's keeper, but he was Dragorn, and that title alone offered him more respect than he had been given by Galanor. Frustrated, Gideon took no care of his path and continued to the oasis. Should he tell Adriel of Galanor's plan? His thoughts were tumultuous as he considered the danger Galanor was walking into. If he didn't act, there was a very good chance the elf wouldn't survive to see the next dawn, not to mention the danger he would be in should Maliath actually take him to Malaysia. Should he then help Galanor? Could they pull off such a dangerous plan if they instead worked together? All the while, Adalandra's life was in the balance, if she was indeed alive. Without intending to, Gideon had wandered into the small clearing where Mournblade rested. Any tempestuous thoughts were forgotten as he gazed at the exquisite blade. How, of all places, had he ended up here? Dragon's Reach was massive in size, and yet he had found himself standing before the sword once more. Excitement and anticipation suddenly filled his mind, the feelings coming from nowhere, and it took the major moment to realize they weren't his emotions. Gideon turned around to see a familiar green dragon staring at him. Ilargo was certainly getting better at sneaking. The dragon's feelings began to build, and Gideon could feel them threatening to overwhelm his senses. The mage stumbled backwards as the world grew eerily silent, and a buzz filled his ears. He could feel his heart pounding in his chest, as if desperate to part from his body. "Take the sword." Those three words put Gideon on his knees and brought tears to his eyes. Ilargo's excitement reached a crescendo, completely overwhelming Gideon, until the edges of his vision blurred and became dark. It was too much for the young mage, who quickly passed out under the shadow of Mournblade.
"Gideon!"
That same voice filled his mind once more, calling him from the ether of his deep sleep. This time the voice wasn't so deafening, but instead had the lighter tone of a teenage boy.
"Gideon!"
"Gideon!" A new, deeper voice brought Gideon from his slumber. The mage felt the cool grass under his face as the world returned. Adriel was crouching by his head, with a concerned expression marring his elegant features. Ilargo was lurching over both of them, with his long green neck craning to see past the elf. The mage was finally able to stand with some help from Adriel.
"What happened?"
Gideon asked, looking for the sun in the sky to discern the passing of time. "Ilargo takes the blame," Adriel replied with a smile. "He explained his error in sharing too much emotion with you. I think he was interested to see how much a human could handle." Adriel cocked his eyebrow at the young dragon. Gideon looked into Ilargo's blue eyes and lost himself for a minute. He instinctively knew that the dragon didn't want Gideon to divulge the extent of what they had shared. Now that Gideon thought about it, he wasn't exactly sure what they had shared. Had he heard actual words from the dragon? It was an impossible thought, since he wasn't an elf or a dragorn. "Let's get you something to eat." Adriel guided the confused mage away from Mournblade. The sun had set by the time Gideon's thoughts returned to Galanor and his secret schemes. The mage had instead spent most of the afternoon going over the events surrounding Ilargo. Though he was desperate to get to the bottom of the mystery, Gideon began to fear for Galanor's life again. On the other side of the small lake that fed from the central waterfall, Adriel sat against the heaving side of Galandavax, sleeping under the starlight. Ilargo lay close by, casually watching Gideon, but the dragon had yet to share any more emotions. Gideon slowly stood up and replaced his shortened staff in its sheath across his back. Adriel remained asleep, and Galandavax never stirred, as the mage crept into the woods beyond the shore. Ilargo watched him disappear, but made no attempt to follow him. When Gideon thought he was far enough away from elven and dragon ears,
He bolted through the trees. It would take most of the night to reach the clearing where Maliath was being guarded, but he would be